everyone. I am Heather, one of the Youth Services Librarians at Heartland's Crow Main Library, and today I am joined by Kelsey, who is our Teen Services Librarian, and Shelby, who works in our Community Relations Department. So we are on part three of our Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark journey back to our childhoods. So let's just do an overall vibe. How are you guys feeling today?
I got spooky cat in the doorway, so I'm happy.
Spooky cat, awesome.
I'm in the most haunted room in the library, so I really set myself up here.
I'm glad that you chose that room. Thank you. Thank you for setting the vibe.
Yeah. Is that upstairs? Is that the most spooky room?
Yeah, the north meeting room, oddly, is usually the most haunted room.
Oh, I thought it was the adult programming room on the third floor.
That one is pretty spooky as well. And then this one used to be the youth department office. So everyone was crowded in here and some spooky stuff would happen when everybody was in here. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is one of the most haunted ones.
It's got a lot of residual energy of decades past. I'm with Kelsey though. I think the third floor is the spookiest, and not just the third floor, but I think the Friends Closet is the spookiest because it was our former director's office, like our very first director, Florence B. Deering. She worked in that little room and it's so creepy and I would never.
No windows. It's like 5 by 5 feet, maybe.
Yeah. You feel like you're in a basement.
4 by 4. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tiny little cubby. Feel like a little.
You definitely feel like you're not alone in there. I was in there looking at like what they had right after the book sale, seeing who's still left, and I definitely felt like I was not by myself.
Yes, every time, and this is one of my little fun facts about programming. But anytime I do a program on the third floor, I just always do a little shout out, like, "Hey, we're doing some stuff for the kids today. It's going to be really cool," and we have less things happen. So I'm just saying, could be a coincidence, but I mean, it goes with the like scary stories vibe too. So
yeah, if you ever want to be real spooked, you can just go in there with your copy of Scary Stories and just sit in there and read the scary stories.
Ooh, I didn't do that. I kind of wish I would.
If you need to.
Excellent. All right. So part three is They Eat Your Eyes, They Eat Your Nose. And I think the last time we were talking about the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out imagery that was in the previous part, guess what's back? Back again. Apparently I'm going to go and quote some Eminem for you right now, but yes, that imagery is coming back. So our creepy scarecrow guy is welcoming us back in. He's eating a big bowl of something totally disgusting. Are they noodles? Are they sticks? Is it blood, grass, vines? Who knows? But there is definitely a nice puddle of blood on the floor. And
he looks pretty happy about it.
He looks really happy.
I kind of want his hat.
Me too.
Yeah, it is kind of awesome. But he's like,
I want his hat.
Life right now. He's just having a grand old time.
And the trench coat. Not. I would love to just walk around like that. In the hat and trench coat.
Yeah. Right? Same. That would be epic.
Halloween costume idea for anyone who doesn't have theirs yet. Use it as a reference picture.
Boom. Nailed it. So our scarecrow narrator, I feel like we should name him. Should he have a name?
Beelzebub.
Beelzebub. Perfect.
Sorry, that was the first thing I thought of. You just call him Bub for short.
We can call him Bub for short.
That's Bub. Yeah.
So our bub, he's letting us know that this section contains stories about all kinds of things. We're going to meet a witch, a swimmer, and we'll also have stories about a hunting trip, a market basket, and a grave. Best of all, there's a story about worms eating a corpse. Your corpse. Delightful. I 100% remember this part vividly from childhood. This was the part that just truly spoke to my little goth soul as a kid, and it made my book look tattered and worn. So we're going to dive into this adventure. And our first story is the Hearse Song. So here in this story, we get a lovely image of a body decomposing. Yay! The first couplet, "Don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for you may be the next to die," is definitely the one that's most impactful for me. And it actually also still like flits through my brain anytime I see a hearse. Like, and it's done this since I was a child. I did not remember that that line was from this book, but this is how much this book has stuck with me. Without, when I just saw like her story, I knew it was that story. But anyway, that's my tangent of the moment. After we get to the thought of all of our impending dooms, the narrator goes on to describe the process of death. They'll put you in a coffin and cover you with dirt and rocks. Everything is peachy keen jelly bean for about a week, and then the process of decay begins. Your coffin leaks and the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. I literally cannot read this even in my head without taking on kind of like a sing-songy thing, like the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So some more really cool things the worms are going to do is they're going to crawl in your nose. They're going to crawl back out your mouth. They're going to eat your eyes, your nose, and the jelly between your toes. Then you know what they're going to do? They're going to crawl into your stomach. Green pus is going to start leaking out and like whipping cream. So that's delicious. And then you know what you're going to do? You're going to put it on some bread because apparently you'll resort to cannibalism and literally eat yourself when you're dead. So cool.
Sounds like a plan.
And I really loved the line, and this is just from my life, the worms play pinochle on your snout. If you don't know what pinochle is, it is a card game that my grandmother absolutely loved when she was still alive, and she taught me how to play it. She'd play it literally every day. She was so great. And I actually looked up because there's like different ways to play the game. She played the Polish Bezique version, which makes sense because she was a first generation Polish immigrant as well. But fortunately, none of the rest of this reminded me of my grandmother. So that was good.
That's fortunate.
Yeah.
Of "Don't laugh as a hearse goes by, because you may be the next to die." A lot of these stories I have not heard as folk tales around. This one I definitely have. I feel like everyone says something when you're a little kid about like, oh, well, don't laugh because you'll be next or whatever. And it's actually probably supposed to be more like, please be respectful.
Yeah.
Fun of the funeral attendees or the hearse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if that kind of folktale started with adults saying, don't make fun of them and laugh at them and make light of this. Death is a heavy thing. And they kind of made it feel heavier by saying, you know, everyone dies. That's going to be you someday. And it turned into this very creepy song with a very creepy hearse image to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to own a hearse.
You want to own a hearse?
I kind of want to. They're kind of elegant. My first job ever was I was a scare actor at a haunted house. And the owners of the haunted house, they actually owned two hearses that they just used as their regular cars. And during October, they put like banners on the long sides to advertise like Haunted Mansion and Asylum 13. And when we would do like parades, they would drive the hearses through the parades. And they're kind of cool looking. They're kind of... They always looked a little bit retro. I kind of want to own one, but I feel like the maintenance costs would be big because they're so like specialty and weird.
I bet. Mm-hmm. But we can't talk about anything until you tell us about this job.
Yeah, I know. What?
In creepy costume and jump out at people?
Yeah. That was my first ever job when I was 17. I was a scare actor. They have you audition and they give you like, basically, they ask you to improv it a little bit. And I had memorized an Edgar Allan Poe poem that I recited kind of creepy. I had some creepy songs that I sang in a high voice like a little girl when I was at the audition. So the layout of the haunted house I worked at, it was Haunted Mansion and Asylum 13 in Illinois. We won some awards. It was great, but unfortunately it's no longer in operation. But it was, we had the mansion first, and then we had the courtyard, which had like a creepy playground and like a graveyard in the back, and then it went into the asylum. So the story of the haunted house was, it was like this psychiatrist, this Victorian psychiatrist who wanted to be really close to his patients. So he built the asylum on his property, just on the other side of their backyard. And he was spending so much time with his patients that his wife became depressed, and she killed herself and their daughter. And then he neglected the patients at the asylum, like didn't feed them or anything for weeks. And then when he finally went back, they tore him to pieces. And so that was the little story they would give in the foyer room.
Wow.
And the room I usually worked in was the room right after the story. So I worked in the parlor as a Victorian ghost most nights. I also at one point worked in the library, and I was a creepy hooded figure in the library, which they set up like a little maze with the bookshelf. I worked in the sewing room at one point, and I was like this creepy rag doll, and I had safety pins all through my face, and like to the point where it jingled when I shook my head, the safety pins in my face. It was really, really fun. You can sort yourself into a lot of positions just to look creepy and weird. And then I did work the asylum one night, and I lost my voice doing that one. But yeah, I have tons of stories from the haunted house, honestly.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Did you say that you lost your voice working it because that was the job that involved a lot of yelling?
Oh yeah, because the mansion side was more like creepy and sinister, but like, the asylum was like more all out. You do the crazy voices and stuff like that. And you know, you do a lot more screaming. I had a power saw. They give you a real power saw, but with a fake blade. So it looks very real. And you turn it on, it makes a very real sound. So I was in the exam room. I would hide behind the exam table, and I had my gown and my like crazy pigtails and like weeping blood. And then I would cut one of the other actors in half. He'd lay on the table, and I'd put the guard on the saw and then just like go. It was very
That's
fun.
Amazing.
That's wild.
It is. It's super fun. One of the things that's funniest with the haunted house is I think it's because of like scary movies, they get sort of this image that you're not going to break the fourth wall. So if you do something like say their name, respond to something they say, or repeat something they say, you get scares really easily. Like people will lose it. And probably my funniest story was working the asylum. We had this baseball team come through, and by the time they've gotten through to the asylum, they're halfway through. So a bunch of them were all really scared, but there was just this one guy who was like very, very stoic. And so I popped out and I did like my crazy person laugh, which I won't subject you to because it's very loud. And a bunch of his friends start like running, and this guy's still chill, but his friend grabs him by the shoulders and goes, "Dude, that's a legit power saw, man." And I just turned and I went, "That's a legit power saw, man." And he lost it. They screamed and they both ran to the next room, which was the electroshock therapy room, so they weren't getting any relief. But I laughed so hard. Like, I didn't even have to try to do a crazy laugh. It was hilarious.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Love that.
So much.
Sorry, that's I totally so cool. digressed out of the book. But yeah, it was a really fun job. I liked it.
You are totally fine. And I can also, like, totally picture you driving a hearse, too. Like, with a skeleton in the back, like, greeting people.
Just
like,
"Howdy."
Hey, guys.
Maybe put a cowboy hat on him.
Yes, absolutely. Like a feather boa.
Change yeah. it out like every month. Maybe one month I'll just be glasses and he'll be reading.
Perfect. Oh, that's so cool. Yes. So our hearse is a little creepy hearse. Its windows has cracks and they look like spider webs. Almost like there was a terrible accident. You can see the shadow of the hearse reflected, and I wonder if that connotes water or if it should be the underworld. Or maybe the hearse was pulled from the water because there's vines or seaweed hanging from it. I do like the weird little bird on the front. He's looking down, so perhaps it's to the underworlds. And then, of course, we've got our song lyrics right below it. That's a creepy little image. And I was just looking at the wheel, and it almost looks like there's a reflection of something in it. But that could just be my eyes. But they kind of look like two faces. Yeah.
The back door is all unhinged and coming off. It's like a bagging. I did laugh a little bit when I got to this page because it's all very creepy. And then I think, like, you know, little kid me must have found a little sticker because I put a sticker of something on there. I think it's a crab. I'm not really sure what it's supposed to be.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really old sticker, so I don't think we'll ever, but it is a very creepy picture.
It's really funny that you mentioned that because on these pages, you can see I was eating like chocolate or something.
Comfort food. Are you
sure it's not dried blood?
Yeah. Ooh, I hope not, but you never know. All right. So our next story is the girl who stood on a grave.
This story, I remembered pretty early on when I picked this book back up. It's one of the little handful of stories that I remember in particular, because I think that the little catch at the end is very creepy and it pulls everything together so well. And I'll kind of get to that when I give us the gist of the story. But is this one that for you two comes to mind quickly when you think of this book? Or is it not a very memorable one?
Yeah, I think it was pretty memorable too. When I first started reading this one, I didn't remember it, but I did remember the image from the story.
Yeah, the image is really memorable, I suppose. We've got our gal who's standing on the grave, but everything is so distorted and creepy, and like the long blades of grass reaching up above the other ones kind of meld into the image of her. And it looks like you can kind of see some things in the mist behind her. Super creepy. Mm-hmm. Horrible. Anyways, so I can give us a little synopsis of this one. Mm-hmm. Some of the wording I noticed in this book is very cute. It seems like maybe it was written in the South, or maybe that whoever wrote it, our guy Alvin was trying to sound like back in the old days. I'm not sure exactly, but some of it is really funny. Like, some boys and girls were at a party one night. Okay. They're hanging out at a party. There's another line somewhere in here that I'll point out later, but there was another one that I just thought was hilarious. But they're talking about the graveyard and how creepy it was. And one of the boys says, "Don't ever stand on a grave after dark because the person inside will grab you and pull you under." So one girl says, "That's not true. That's a superstition. I'll go stand on a grave." So a boy hands her his knife and says, "Hey, here's a sweet idea. Stick the knife into the grave. And that way we'll know that you were there tomorrow when we go check. So we know you're not a weenie." So she's like, great, solid. So she goes out to the graveyard and she's telling herself there's nothing to be scared of, but she's scared anyway, because you're in a graveyard after dark. And she picks out a grave. She's like, this is the one, this is our golden nugget. And so she stands on it and then she bends over, plunges the knife into the soil behind her, and she starts to leave, but she can't get away because something's holding her back. So she's struggling to leave and she's so scared that she falls to the ground and then she never comes back. So when she doesn't come back, her friends go to look for her and they find her sprawled out over the grave. And without realizing it, what had happened was she plunged the knife through her skirt, pinning herself to the ground, and it was just the knife holding her, and she died of fright. I love that. I think it's a ghost story, and then come to find it's fear that'll get you in the end. And then the picture to go with it is so creepy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm wondering too if the line that like made you chuckle was the one I commented on in my notes, was, "I'll give you a dollar if you stand on a grave."
That one is hilarious. I would not do that for a dollar. That sounds not worth it.
See, my price is higher. Like, if you're going to get me to risk my life, theoretically, I'm going to need more than a dollar to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
But yeah, this story was so spooky. And I kind of, like, with both of these first stories, I was thinking, because I know, like, in cemeteries, I would never walk on graves either. I will never still in a cemetery walk on graves. But did you guys do the thing when you were a kid and you were in your car and you'd, like, try to hold your breath until you got to, like, the other side of the cemetery if you passed a cemetery?
My mom told us that she did that. I actually like to indicate towards cemeteries, either point or, like, indicate with my hand. I started doing it in high school, and I would be all, like, I never miss an opportunity to point at the dead, because I think I was just trying to be weird. But it came to this point where I'm like, I feel like they need to be acknowledged because they are ignored a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of ways that death and the dead are kind of hidden. And if you watch Caitlin Doughty, who's Ask a Mortician, she talks a lot about, you know, the societal implications of that. So I just like acknowledging them. And my sister will actually wave at graveyards because she likes the idea behind it too. They're like, all right, I'm acknowledging you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's sweet. I never held my breath. I don't remember doing anything. I mean, I was that guy in high school who would, like, go out and hang out in the local graveyard sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I, like, had a couple of tombstones that I really liked, and I would, like, lean on them and nap on them. and I remember one time I brought my dog with me, and we were just out there hanging out together. And he, like, wheeled around out of nowhere and just started growling and barking at this one tombstone. And so I left him there. I was like, okay, you stay here and I'm gonna go check it out. So I went over and I went to see if there was, like, a squirrel behind the tombstone or, like, something in the tree above it or anything like that. And there was nothing there. And I don't remember if I got the heebie-jeebies and decided to leave. If anything, I probably just relocated us to a different side of the graveyard. That was a little creepy. Dogs always know, and cats always know.
Mm-hmm. I always really wanted to, like, just, like, lean against a tombstone and read in a graveyard, but I always got, like, self-conscious that, like, the person's family would walk by and be like, that's disrespectful. And, like, I think cemeteries are really, really pretty. I really
like them.
But I was just, like, I was always, like, I got the social anxiety about it. I was more scared of, like, the living people who don't want me leaning on their loved ones' graves and anything, like, spooky happening in a cemetery. Oh, I remember what it was my mom used to say with the holding your breath past the cemetery. It was less scary. She would say, it's impolite to breathe in front of those who can't.
Yeah.
That's so mindful.
Yeah, it was, like, more of a joke thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just, like, jumped back trains of thought because
You are totally fine. Yeah, I find cemeteries kind of soothing, honestly. Like, right now I'm sitting in our study room and it's the one with the view of the Heartland Cemetery right across from it, and I don't know, it's so quiet and, like, peaceful and calm, and I'm with you, I really like cemeteries too.
That one's such a pretty cemetery too. I remember when I first came out here from Chicago, when I was looking at apartments, and we went to, like, drive by because I had already accepted the job here, but I've never been here.
Right.
I also remember, like, stalking the library on Google Maps and seeing the cemetery across the way. And it's very weird because, like, the Google Earth photos of cemeteries, the gravestones look, it's almost like Morse code because they're just little dashes and dots with their shadows from taken from straight above. It really does look like Morse code.
I never thought of that, but dude, you're right.
Look at cemeteries on Google Earth. It's really interesting.
Huh.
That's awesome.
What do you say about cemeteries before I drag us on to our next story? Some cemeteries are very beautiful and peaceful, like the Heartland Cemetery, and the Parshaville Cemetery is another one that's really nice. And I'm not going to tell you that this is necessarily a bad cemetery, because I'm sure that I don't even know if it is technically a cemetery, but I'm going to tell you about it because Our wonderful pal Eric released one of his magical malevolent Michigan videos. I think that was last Friday. And he talks about this place in Fenton called the Sunken Garden. And if you haven't heard of it, check it out. Cause it's, I used to go there on Halloween night after dark with my sibling. And it's a real creepy looking place. And I'm sure it has a really interesting history too. And I never knew what it was called or what exactly it was until Eric released this video. So I'm really glad that he did. But if you look at the photos, it's definitely a Halloween-y place. It's beautiful, but it's also kind of freaky looking.
Okay. I have never heard of that before. I will definitely be looking into that.
Check it out.
Thanks for the tip.
It's like, I don't want to describe it because I won't do it justice, especially because it's being recorded for public use, but it's like there, I think I remember there being this really big, beautiful willow tree and like a tiny bridge going over this little brook, and you go over and then you like go through this other little area and it looks like a cemetery, but I don't think it technically is, but it's got like a circle of what looks like tombstones. They might just be like plaques, but each of them has one of our US states on it. And then I think like a little expression or a quote under that. And then there's, I think there's like a big obelisk in the middle. It's kind of creepy looking, especially because it's so old. And like all of the little plaques themselves kind of look like tombs and they're like sunken in. Check it out.
I'm totally going. I pulled it up like on my computer. I'm told that's what I'm doing after we're done recording. Going down a rabbit hole. All right. Our next story is a new horse.
So a new horse is about two farmhands that share a room, and one sleeps in the back and the other sleeps near the door. And the one who sleeps in the back is all like tired every day because he says that at night a witch puts a bridle on him and turns him into a horse and rides him around town all night, so he never gets a good night's sleep. And his buddy decides to switch places with him, so the witch will turn him into a horse and ride him all around. But because the bridle is what turns him into the horse, when the witch rides him over to one area, he like scratches his head on a post to get the bridle off and turns into a person again. And then he puts the bridle on the witch and turns her into a horse, sells her back to the husband and like trades horses. So he gets a new horse and like the husband doesn't know he's paid for his wife. And he like puts the horseshoes on her. And then when he takes the bridle off to like put her in the barn, she turns back into a person again, but she has the horseshoes like nailed to her hands and feet. And the farmhands are like, I'm clever and I got the better of them. And yeah, it's a little gruesome, but one of the reasons I like this one is because, have you guys heard of where the term nightmare came from?
No.
Okay, so nightmare.
I think I just did.
Yeah.
You're very close, right? So there's German, it's like Nachtmären. I don't speak German. It's not on my list of languages. So I might have said that really, really badly. But yeah, it was a creature called a nightmare that there were a couple different versions. One is that you would be taken out and they'd ride a person around like the sky in the woods all night and tire them out, or that it would be a like ghostly horse that would make you ride the horse. But usually you were the horse. And they put a bridle on you and ride you around like a horse at night. And that's where nightmares supposedly came from in this like German myth. So this like super reminded me of that.
Oh, 100%. I bet that's like what the story is based on too. Cause this one actually made me laugh. It was just right from the jump, it made me laugh. Like, and just the image of the like the hooves on the woman, I don't know why it made me laugh so hard, but that makes more sense because I feel like the story you told was creepier than the one in this book.
Yeah, maybe they demystified it a little bit for the children's.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But like in some myths in the German version, they would ride you to death.
Yeah, and that's scary. That's
and like you come back all bloodied hands and feet and like yeah, because they'd ride you around like a horse, but you didn't actually have like hooves like a horse, so you're running around on your bare hands and feet from being laid in.
It's totally cool. You're among friends.
Cool. Sorry.
Yeah. You're fine.
Germany has some fun folk horror.
Yes. I love folk horror. What did you guys think of the sassy horse image?
The horse image in this one actually looks funny, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
The head is as large as the body, if not larger. And then its back legs, it has like a high heel on one foot and then a human eye up near the things. I know it was probably trying to be creepy, but this one I just found it funny. Like yeah, the illustration is so disproportionate, it just makes me giggle.
Yeah, it was like if you asked a little kid to like draw a horse.
Like, yeah, I found it kind of cute.
Yeah, it just looks silly. It kind of reminded me of Midsummer Night's Dream, the guy with the donkey head.
Yes.
Bottom.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Because I was thinking like Where the Wild Things Are, but that wasn't right either. It is Midsummer Night's Dream. That's what it makes me think of too.
Yeah, it just looks comical.
Yes.
To me.
Agreed.
Well, on a similar note, our next story is alligators.
Mm-hmm.
For this one, I find it creepy, but also this alligator is kind of cute and chonky, and he's like, he's got like kind of a menacing smile, but like his teeth aren't too scary. He's got kind of the one really creepy thing about this picture is that the claw looks very human-like. Mm-hmm. Human fingers and fingernails, which is gross and very strange. But the picture, it's not too bad. I think the creature features that are actually just animals don't hit quite as hard for me as like the ghosts and the murderers and the creepy stuff. I am talking about alligators, right? I'm not totally.
Yes, you're talking about alligators.
You're the alligator.
Okay, I will give you a brief overview of the story. So a woman marries a man. There you go. The book says he was a nice fellow and they got along pretty well together. Okay, well, that's good. But every night he goes swimming in the river. So sometimes he'd be gone all night long and she would be lonely. That's unfortunate. So the couple had two young sons. And as soon as the boys could walk, the father began to teach them how to swim. And then they would all go out to the river at night and they would leave the wife and the mother all alone. So after a while, her neighbors started to notice her acting strangely. She would tell people around town that her husband was turning into an alligator and that he was trying to turn the boys into alligators too. And everyone told her that that's just silly. Nothing wrong with a man taking his sons out swimming. And early one morning, the young woman came running into town from the direction of the river and she was soaking wet. She said that a big alligator and two little alligators had pulled her in and tried to get her to eat a raw fish. And so she said that that was her family and that they wanted her to be an alligator with them, but that she'd gotten away. Unfortunately, I guess this little story just hates women because everyone tells her that she's insane and they put her in a hospital and no one ever saw the husband or the boys again. They just disappeared. But Now and then, a fisherman would tell about seeing alligators in the river at night, and usually it was a big alligator with two little ones. But everyone knew that there weren't any alligators around here, so they must have just been making that up.
Mm-hmm. And you know, back when this tale probably originated, they used to put, you know, women into asylums for being hysterical and that kind of thing, so I thought that was an interesting parallel as well, that, you're just crazy. It's like, no, I'm not, though.
Just need to be listened to.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
all.
But no one listened to her.
It's also weird, too, because you'd think at least people would be all like, well, where are the sons and the husband? Right. Like, how could you put her in an asylum, like, without talking to her, like, next of kin, her family? Because usually if they think you're unfit to make decisions for your own health, they'll go to, like, the next person in your family, be it your husband, your mom, your kid, your whatever. So like, why didn't anyone, even if you didn't believe they were alligators, surely you noticed that they were missing.
I mean, if they went to the husband, he would have just said, oh no, don't put her in an asylum. I need her around so she can be my swamp wife and eat raw fish with me. I found the image of like three little alligators just like surrounding a poor woman and like shoving fish into her face really funny. And I find it funny, but I just keep thinking of like Gollum.
My precious.
It's not very complete.
Oh man. Well, you know what I think we have room for one more story.
Thank you so much.
That's my transition.
What a segue. Our next
story is room for one more. A man is staying with friends in Philadelphia. He has a great time catching up, but when he tried to sleep, he just tossed and turned. Suddenly, a hearse full of people appeared, and the driver said, "There's room for one more." The man said no, and he was still shaken up, so he talked to his friend about it. His friend convinced him it was a dream, but he wasn't sure. The man went to his meeting, was about to get on an elevator, but then he saw the hearse driver again, who said, "There's room for one more." The man was frightened and said he'd wait for the next one. And it's a good thing he did, because the elevator ended up plunging downward, killing everyone inside. This one was pretty spooky to me, because like the hearse driver was death personified and he was having precognitive dreams. So it's really good he didn't get on the elevator.
Ooh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then these images are like creepy gargoyles. And I was actually getting kind of like Catholic vibes from them. One looks like a religious figure with a cross on his head, probably either the Pope or a bishop. One has wings, like an angel of doom. And then the other one, it looks like either a corpse bride, but keeping in with the Catholic vibes, I'm kind of wondering if it was supposed to be like Mary Magdalene. As in the Catholic thing. So that was the image I had kind of in my brain. And then there's that empty one, because there's room for one more.
Ooh, creepy. Good eye.
Yeah. And I just realized there's four. So it also kind of makes me think of like the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which I don't know if that's part of this image as well, but this image sketched me out for sure.
Yeah, this is another one of the stories that I tend to remember, and it's not read all the way through it that I remember that it's kind of one of those stories where the puzzle pieces all kind of fit at the end, and that's what is creepy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this one. I like when the everything kind of comes together at the end. I think that's maybe what I like a little less about the alligator story. Is immediately it's just the woman says that her family are turning into alligators, and that's the story. So you kind of get the ending before you get to the ending. I like this one because it really like wraps everything up very creepily at the end.
Yeah, I agree. And I know our next story is going to dive into some folklore as well. But with alligators, going back a little bit, I kind of wondered if that was playing on like indigenous shape-shifting and that kind of thing as well. Though I don't know if alligators were one of the things that people kind of shifted into. But speaking of shapeshifters, our next story is the Wendigo.
Right, so this me, I'm talking about that one. So the Wendigo, I'll talk about the story in the book first, but it's actually very different than other Wendigo stories.
I was hoping you might point that out, because
it has almost nothing the title, in common I was with Wendigo really stories.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say?
Yeah, it has almost nothing in common with actual Wendigo stories.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually kind of disappointed in this one, not gonna lie, as somebody who likes, you know, folk horror type things.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, it's a wealthy man is going hunting in Canada, and he hires an Indigenous person called DeFago to be his guide. And they make camp near a frozen lake, and after about 3 days with nothing to show for it, there's a windstorm. And the wind that's howling by the tents sounds like someone like yelling DeFago's name, like DeFago. And the hunter thinks he's losing his mind, but DeFago is like really, really scared, like burying his head in his arms. But he says it's nothing. And then suddenly he jumps to his feet. He runs out of the tent, despite the hunter trying to hold him back. And he runs off into the dark, saying that like his feet are on fire. And the next day, the hunter like follows his tracks, and the tracks slowly get way longer than like human feet before eventually disappearing. And in this one, he comes back the next year, and he talks to like some of the other people in DeFago's community, and they say that like the Wendigo comes on the wind and it drags you away at great speed until your feet are burned off, and then carries you into the sky and drops you. And then he sees a figure he thinks is DeFago with like a big hat on, but when he takes the hat off, all that's left is ashes. And this one just, oh, it bothered me because it has nothing to do with the Wendigo. It almost sounds like he heard the name Wendigo and thought it sounded like wind go, mm-hmm. which is silly because it's not an English word, so it doesn't have the English root word wind or go. Mm-hmm. Like it's like he did no research whatsoever.
Yeah,
in a lot of stories, the Wendigo is actually, you know, represents hunger, gluttony, starvation. Sometimes there's cannibalism vibes with it. A lot of times, like it's a long humanoid, like antler-headed creature rather than something that flies. I don't know where the fire came from at all. Like, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on the Wendigo, but just this is so far from anything I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for what it's worth, it sounds like our guy, Alvin, got the story as generally a summer camp tale from northeastern U.S. So he got it from a professor from University of Maine who had first heard it in the 30s when he attended Camp Curtis Reed, a Boy Scout camp near Mahopac, New York. And then there are a few sources to go through. But that being said, I also have never heard this. It sounds like he just found a very particular a very particular nook in Wendigo stories. But most of the stuff that I've ever heard about it is also, yeah, very different and nothing like this.
Yeah, I was also kind of wondering, because it's different from the Wendigo legends I know as well, because like, of course, Appalachia has like the legends too, like if you hear something, no you didn't, if you see something, no you didn't, that kind of thing. But with the name DeFago, I actually ended up looking into like what country of origin that name is from, and it's frequently found in Ireland, Britain, and Switzerland, so this wouldn't have been the indigenous man's name, which made me wonder if he was a victim of Canadian Indian boarding schools, especially because he was like ash at the end. So I was like just super curious about that. And I know they just found some more things with the boarding schools in Canada as well. Like there was stuff uncovered. And I don't know if that's just me like reading too much into it as well, but I thought that was really interesting because it's definitely not an indigenous name as far as I know. So I was thinking maybe that was like their, well, it wouldn't be Americanized name, but Canadianized, like
anglicizing
when they went to the school.
That makes sense to me too, because I saw like DeFago written out and it has an X and a U, which is very, you know, French over one of it. And it does, like, it looked and sounded a little bit French too. Mm-hmm. I also did notice that I used the term indigenous person, but the book said Indian.
Yes.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's an old story.
Using that, you know.
Yes.
It was published quite a while ago, and then probably he got this version quite a while ago too, so it's not, I wouldn't be surprised if it had like some telephone, again, people filled in gaps with what little they knew, if it was like a kid's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, absolutely. And the other one, speaking of them using Indian instead of Indigenous, just the how crazy and things are like thrown around, like, oh, crazy, oh, they're nuts, oh, they're this, and it's like, it's just really insensitive depictions toward like mental health. But again, this book is 40 years old in the 80s. You know, like, we just weren't as aware of a lot of things. So, but even with the way these are being, are being described by us, we're, I love that we're just naturally like switching back to the like, oh, that's Indigenous, like, oh yeah, that sort of thing. So
yeah, because we do know how to code switch a little bit, and like, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. But that really bothered me in this story as well. I just kept like internally like cringing every time I read it.
Well, especially because the like mystic Indian trope. I'm putting my mm-hmm. hand quotes because that's what the trope is called, but
I know, I was gonna say I didn't care for that either. And you know, again, it's an old story, it goes back from like before the 1930s, but we've got this guy who's like, I need a guide, so I'll just find a native person to mm-hmm. be, you know, my hunting guide. It's a tired trope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even the way you said it, like an Indian who needed the money badly. I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's that tough.
Also plays mm-hmm. in a lot of stereotypes too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our next story is The Dead Man's Brains.
Oh boy, howdy, my friends. Did you either do this as a kid or imagine playing this game, The Dead Man's Brains game?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're doing something similar for our Hocus Pocus party on Saturday.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah. Okay.
I love this story. I think the picture, to be fully honest with you, is kind of cute. The little, mm-hmm. he's got a platter with the dead man's head on it, and his head is kind of, the top is cut off, so we got some nice steaming brains. Okay. Anyways, this is less of a story. It's more of a spooky game that you can play. And it's where you all sit in a darkened room and a storyteller tells you about a corpse. And so each part of the corpse is passed around for partygoers to feel. And sometimes you have to just stick through it to the end, or sometimes you're out if you get too scared. If you like shout in fright or whatever, then you're out of the game. I say you got to stick it out. So the different parts that you get into are, we talk about a man who was murdered and many years ago, and we have his remains for you to feel. So first you feel his brains, and it's a wet, squishy tomato, which I hate it. It has to be a big tomato, but you know, that's fine. And then we have his eyes still frozen with surprise, and you have two peeled grapes. I love that so much. That's disgusting. And we have his nose, which is a chicken bone. I find that hilarious. Ear, which is a dried apricot. I guess that could work. It's a little round, but you know, the feeling would be pretty gross. And then we have his hand, rotting flesh and bone, which this one, I don't know. I think you'd have to come up with something a little more creative, because they suggest using a cloth or a rubber glove that's filled with mud or ice. I think I'd want something that feels more like skin. Any suggestions? For food that feels like skin.
Oh, I can't think of any that would have the like containing quality of it.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I think the glove would just feel like latex, but if you use a cloth, like, oh, this is just a wet, squishy cloth. So we'll have to brainstorm that for when we go mm-hmm. to this Halloween season. They also have his hair still grows, and then you're supposed to hand out a handful of corn silk or wet fur or yarn. Wet fur?
Yum.
That's the one. That's a winner. Disgusting. And then his heart still beats now and then, and then you just get a piece of raw liver, which, okay. His blood still flows. Dip your fingers in it. It's nice and warm. It's a bowl of catsup thinned with warm water. I've never felt that before.
Mm-mm.
I wouldn't know. I'll have to, I don't know, is that like a corn syrup type of thing to make it thick?
I don't know.
Ketchup and warm water.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the last thing that they have is, that's all that there is except for these worms. They're the ones that ate the rest of him. And then you have a handful of wet cooked spaghetti noodles, which that one's also just, you're sitting in the dark. Someone hands you some wet spaghetti and says, oh, these are worms. You betcha I'm not going to care for that.
Mm-hmm.
Gross. But yeah. I read a book called The Troop by Nick Cutter, and it's about worms that, it's about worms that just eat you from the inside out, and it's horrifying.
Yum.
Sensitive to worms right now. Okay.
Yeah, but this one is definitely something I remember from childhood. I don't know.
Me too.
I don't know if I got it from this book, but this is definitely something like we would do at Halloween parties and that sort of thing. So
yeah, that one drifted around this neck of the woods. Yeah. Sure.
The grapes and noodles, I think, were the most common ones that people would do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I think they're the easiest. Thing.
Yeah. I think the latex glove filled with warm water is one too. Which I find unfortunate because I don't think it's very good, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate thing is a lot of these are yummy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would feel bad wasting them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. I really like tomatoes and dried apricots. I'm a dried apricot person.
Me too. Love an ear. All right, we got one more.
Our last story in this section is, may I carry your basket? And it's about a man named Sam, and he was walking one night and he sees an old woman carrying a basket. He asks her, may I carry your basket? And she obliges. Suddenly, a voice under the cloth said, that's not very nice of you, followed by wild laughter. Of course, Sam is pretty startled, so he drops the basket and the woman's head rolls out. He starts to run, but the head chases him. It eventually catches up to him, it flies into the air, and it sinks its teeth into his leg. He screams, he continues running, and the woman and her head continue chasing him. The head eventually caught up to them, but bit them one more time on the other leg, and then the woman and the head disappeared. Total Headless Horseman vibes here, but it also made me think of Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus as well, when he's like following his, trying to get his head back. So this image, I feel like it's pretty basic. It's just kind of boring. It's just a basket with like some creepy vines coming out, which I guess are, that's probably hair coming out since
like,
the basket. Yeah, so maybe it is a little creepier than I had originally thought, but I'm not gonna lie, it is kind of funny, like
I know, thinking about it's a little funny
like a head, like
yeah.
I wouldn't think it was funny if it was happening to me, but it's happening to someone else, so
we can laugh.
It's a little comical. Kind of reminds me of like the unintentional comedy genre of horror, where mm-hmm. you get like The Evil Dead, which then in its sequels completely embraced the comedy part and just went all in.
Yes.
Like that's a whole subgenre of horror. It's great.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. Don't forget to tune in next week to hear what we thought about part 4. Until then, stay spooky.